Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. To rise up everybody and burn down the system, pay us the exit rules. Wake up the silence.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show for a brand new episode. Of course, our bumper music brought to you by, or intro music, I should say, brought to you by Zero King, a great bunch of guys out of West Virginia, and I'm very proud to have that song on our intro. But anyway, tonight we've got a fantastic guest that I had the pleasure of meeting at MidSouthCon last year, and Alexander Brown is going to give a grand intro to him shortly here. And, of course, tonight we've also got Michael West and Susan Roddy. And, of course, after her visit last week, we spent the entire week repairing the studio because after the Armageddon girl visited, of course, everything was in ruins, and of course required a whole repair because it's just sheer mayhem whenever SH Roddy enters the house. So but we did get the studio fixed in time for the show tonight. The studio is fixed in time for the show. We spare no expense. But tonight got a few things just to give you some updates on. Got some great blog tours going on for Jason Sizemore with Irredeemable, his dark fantasy Appalachian Gothic, or I should say Appalachian Gothic. I got to make sure I pronounce that correctly. And horror and science fiction collection. And then also we're touring for the Heroes Best Friend anthology edited by Scott Sandridge, and guess what? S.H. Roddy has a story in that one, so she actually has an interview and a guest post and as part of this week's tour there. And so it's going well, and next week is actually going to be a big new release week. Next week is the week we're actually going to be coming out with Crimson Heart's new book, Death's Dance, and then also Bob Freeman, his new one, Shadows Over Somerset. They will be coming out on the Monday and Tuesday of next week in ebook with print right after it. And then later in the week, hopefully, my new one, The Undying Light, will be available at least on ebook because we're actually launching the print edition in Lexington on July 5th. And, yeah, you don't want to miss that because I'm pulling out all the stops because you never know, it may be my last ever major book appearance so before I retire, so definitely be there. So anyway, looking forward to that. But tonight, we don't want to waste too much time, so I'll kick it over to Alex and Susan and Michael and see if they got any updates for us this week. All right, guys.
All right. Well, hey, how's it going, everybody?
Good, good. other than the fact that I'm sitting in front of a fan right now. my air conditioning has gone kaput.
Awesome. Well, not too awesome that it's gone out completely, but I'm hoping that you can get someone in there pretty quickly to take care of it.
Hopefully.
Well, how's everything going with your new book?
It's going well. We're getting ready to start a big blog tour here, first part of July, and I'll be appearing next weekend, not this coming weekend, but next weekend, the 27th through 29th, at Days of the Dead in Indianapolis. which will be the first chance that people will have on the convention scene to pick up a paperback copy of the new one, Hades of Disciples. And with any luck, we should have also hardcovers of White Game. So looking forward to that as well.
Nice. Well, not meaning to toot my own horn here, but I do have a con coming up next weekend in Lake Charles, Louisiana, called Bayou Con. And I recently had a short story published on ebook through Prose Publishing. It's called The Night the Jack-O-Lantern Went Out, and it is 99 cents per download. And for anyone who downloads this book and proves to me that they did download it onto their e-reader, if they come up to me at BayouCon and show me where they downloaded it, they will get a special treat. All they have to do is show proof. But tonight, I am so thrilled, definitely, to have the guest that we do, Jerry Benz. I was able to meet him at Mid-South Con with Steven Zimmer, and when we had met, he explained to me about his State of Horror books and what he wanted to do with those. Me being a major horror buff already and also having my feet in Southern Haunts where it covers the southern states, I told him, I said, wow, this is just amazing. I really want to be able to work with you. And over that time, we have been able to build an online friendship, I guess you could say. And it's always neat to see his updates on how the State of Horror books are going about. And, of course, this is me following him on Facebook. How are you doing tonight, Jerry?
I'm doing great. And thanks for the introduction there. So I have to kind of give some things back to you on that. When we did meet down at Mid-South and we were talking, you had just released The Southern Haunts Part 2. So I picked up, I came back from the con with a little bit of extra baggage, a little bit more than a little, picking up the books and been going through reading those. And I want to kind of go back and say that, you know, as I'm reading through these, your anthologies are the kind of books that you want to grab and read. And being a huge horror fan myself, I really like to see these authors and stuff that are in there and the work that you've done on it. So I just want to kind of let you know on that, because I have both of them actually sitting here tonight, because I just finished up one of them and starting on the second one.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying them. Now, let's shine a little bit of light on what you're doing for America, which is introducing the state of horror that we're all in. Now, the very first thing I want to ask you, what inspired this series?
Well, this series actually was out for a little bit. Armand Rosemilla, you might know him from the Dying Day series and quite a few others. He actually had this series out and released 9 smaller books with these over the past few years. I started working with him back in December on this, and we were talking about it potentially, you know, acquiring, working on this, and I came on as an editor with him in January. We did a huge relaunch. That's kind of where the newer version, the modern version of the State of Horrors came about. We wanted to expand it out to have a little bit larger stories on it, revamp the covers, and then kind of dig in and try to complete one of the dreams he had, is to see all 50 states out. So that's, since then, it kind of took off a little bit bigger than I thought it would. We have a lot of excitement. We have a lot of social media excitement out there with it. A lot of authors are submitting in some really great stories that are going to be coming out within about the next 6 to 8 weeks. We'll have 2 of the books coming out, which is A State of Horror, Illinois, and A State of Horror, New Jersey. And kind of feel of what the State of Horror is you travel around the country. I've been at many states, and I'm sure each of you have. And when you go to a state, each state has its own personality, has its own culture, has its own folklore. A lot of times there's a certain feel that you will have. That is what we're trying to capture with the State of Horror. So those stories, those ideas that where you read the stories, you almost can visualize being in that state and introduce other people to kind of a feel of those states. So that's one of the things that we are shooting for with each of these books.
Nice. Nice. And I completely understand where you're coming from with this, because it does seem I work in tourism, and we have so many people that come down from north. And when they come into Mississippi and they explain to us, well, we've already been here for a day or so, and there's just a feel to it that's completely different from where I'm from. The spirituality, the food, the culture, everything just mixed into one. It's just it's a plethora of pleasure when you go to a new place and you just pull all of the sources into you and enjoy it. Now, with your State of Horror books, what kind of stories can we expect, such as, are you looking for ghost stories? Are you looking for creatures, maniacs, a mixture of those categories? And also, about what age demographic are you looking to have this book read by?
I think the easiest question answer on that is the age demographics. Most of these stories are not focused towards or would be good for younger or YA readers. They're pretty much kind of graphic stories in some sense. They're more of an adult area. As far as what you can expect, all of the above. There's some stories that do have the maniac that's hiding in the closet. There's a lot of ghost stories. There's folklore monsters. New Jersey has a few of the New Jersey Devil stories into it. There's even some of these that almost kind of fall over to where you might see something otherworld in it as well. The stories kind of range. The personalities range from the authors. There's some tongue-in-cheek horror stories that are out there. There's also some that have a feel of almost the Rod Serling's Twilight Zone. All of these kind of combine in together, kind of weave a story.
Okay. Now, with those subjects such as ghosts, creatures, maniacs, what's your favorite? Are you more of a ghost story person? Do you like the creature story? Do you like the stabbers? What do you go for?
I personally like ghost stories. I can remember when I started picking up reading, even as a kid, you get a story, and the monsters you can kind of discount. But for some reason, you can never really completely discount those ghost stories. And it makes it a little bit, you know, where you run up the basement stairs a little bit faster, kind of avoid looking in the mirror when it's, you know, late at night. Those are the things that get your heart pounding. And for me, a lot of the stories I read now, I still can feel that almost juvenile effect of reading it. And my room is in the basement of our house, so those stairs are dark and they're open, so I run up them occasionally a little bit fast depending on what I'm reading that night. So those are kind of the ones I enjoy. However, there's other ones, other areas, and it just depends on how the author spins a tale. I've been on a zombie kick for the past year or so. I've met a lot of great people on that, and I kind of, those have a different way that they impact you, almost on a cerebral level. These, you can kind of see this as their statements and what would happen. Whereas, you know, the slasher ones, those are more the real monsters that are out there. I try not to think of those too much.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree. The slasher and the paranormal, just something about those where they're more tangible. It seems like there is the possibility that most of those could happen to a person, you know, especially with ones that really don't get too far-fetched. And it does seem like, you know, this could happen to me late at night. I need to run up those stairs and get to where it's populated in my home. Now, what cliches do you hope authors avoid when writing about a state? And this can be anything from southern accents to northern accents to creatures to plot twist. What are you just not looking for?
I think accent is, that's one of the things in dialogue that's very hard to come across on the page, because there's a tendency that when you start, it gets overbearing. and it makes it, it kind of pulls away from that. The other kind of cliche is more kind of on the state. There are certain states that are known for certain things, and you can almost guarantee that you're going to get 50 stories that are just of the same ones. It becomes difficult. I spoke with an author recently, and he was talking about how he chooses what he wants to write for an anthology. I was doing a small interview with him, and he said he throws out the first five ideas he has, because the first five are probably the same first five that everybody else has thought about. And then that's where you find the kind of the magic, the off the path kind of piece. But in a writing style, you do get a few things that you kind of see over and over, and you wish you didn't. And that's one of those is that falling out of your perspective, and you know it flips back and forth so much through a short story that it's hard to keep track of what point of view are we trying to follow. And that, I think, is something that I'm guilty of as well, and I have to go back and check that multiple times myself. So I understand how easy it is doing it, but on a short story, you don't have that luxury that you do on a longer novella or novel. So those are kind of things I try to hope people would avoid a little bit.
Yeah, and that's actually something I've kind of experienced with the Southern Haunts books. They're stories that I have received, and they're great stories. However, they are not fitting for a short story. I cannot tell you how many stories I've come across and I've said, well, this is great, but what you have is a novella or a novel. This cannot be condensed into 12 to 14 pages. And a good example is one of these authors had submitted a story that regarded three generations of people. And in the matter of 12 pages, she was trying to describe these three generations of people and give them character development while doing scene and so on and so forth, and it did not work at all because it's just trying to cram too much into one thing. And so keeping one point of view in a short story is actually not only best for the editors, but it is best for the readers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, absolutely agree.
That's one thing that was done with this story is it kept jumping from perspective, and it just became, whoa, who am I reading here? Now, I know you had the opportunity to go down to New Orleans pretty recently. Did you have a nice time down there?
I had a wonderful time. New Orleans in Louisiana is probably one of my favorite places in the U.S. to visit. There's something about New Orleans, and as I said, Louisiana in general, the culture is so different than everywhere else I visit in the country. It's not so much even the laid back, it's the history that built upon and shifted and changes, and the new influences that came in to where it has its own character, its own depth. And that's one of many trips that I've made down there recently. And each time I discover a new thing about it. That just so happens to be one of the open submission areas we have right now is for the state of Horror, Louisiana. So I kind of could write my trip off a little bit as research.
I was just about to inquire that because I did notice that as of May 1st, 2014, there will be submissions which are going to be open for State of Horror, North Carolina, and State of Horror, Louisiana. And so when you had mentioned to me that you had gone down to New Orleans, I'm like, I wonder if he's checking out the culture to see what stories are going to be best for his next book.
That seems to be something. I travel a lot just with different things. Most of the time I'm out of the country on some of the things with career opportunities I work with. But when we had an open submissions for New Jersey and Illinois, I had to take a business trip to New Jersey. And then we had a vacation plan for Louisiana, and it just happens after we decided that we were going to have open submissions. So I keep thinking about the next two, going, where do I want to go to? Because if this keeps up, I get to go see at least one state out of the open submissions each time. I'll be traveling all over the place.
Yes. Hey, it works well when you're an author or an editor or a publisher because you kind of get a feel of what you're looking for, kind of like what you had explained earlier with us. Now, as far as favorite state goes, I guess we can write that off as Louisiana, correct? Or is there another state that you would rather say is your favorite?
No, I would say Louisiana would be my favorite, but I grew up in Missouri and I still live here. And I think Missouri, especially the eastern part, east and southeast portions of it, is a little bit overlooked at times. There's a lot of interesting history. You can almost consider some parts of St. Louis as being little New Orleans because the influence was as they came up the river. But there's also the caves, and it almost has the same amount of ghost stories if you look deep enough for it. So I would say St. Louis and Missouri are kind of a close second to Louisiana for me.
I want to say that I've heard of a few horror cons in St. Louis. Is that correct? Or am I thinking of somewhere
yes.
else?
No, there is one. It's listed as St. Louis, but it's usually held across the river on Illinois, which around here we call that all the same piece. And I believe it comes up in October, and I have not personally attended that one because my first con was Mid-South, which if I was going to have a nice first con, I got to meet so many great people there. I think that one was probably the best choice for me to start with. So the one this year, I'm hoping to look at the one that's in St. Louis. I think it's usually around September or October.
Okay. And, of course, there's Imaginarium, which we are hoping that you will be able to attend. I know that I am definitely going to be there as far as a con goes. I've never been any further than Kentucky, but I'm really hoping to expand that out a little bit more onto the northern side. So as I'm kind of figuring you out about this, I'm testing the waters, seeing exactly which ones might be pretty good to see.
Well, I will.
Yeah, we got loads for you, Jerry. We got loads for you here as far as the horror stuff because we've got, of course, all the Appalachian traditions and all the, you know, all the folklore and ghost stuff and you know, kind of even like witchcraft things that come from the hills and mountains here. And so, yeah, we got quite a bit for you to entice you for one of your volumes for Kentucky. I gotta speak up for my home state here.
It's amazing what can be found when you're looking for it or when you speak to the correct people. Because with Vicksburg, we're a very religious conservative town. We're very not conservative on subjects such as horror or heavy metal, which is kind of weird. But as far as religion goes, you're either Baptist, Pentecostal, Methodist, or Catholic, one of those. And anyway, with me being a practitioner of Santeria, I was talking with people and discovered a little place downtown about 2 or 3 years ago where it was a drugstore. But if you go to the person at the counter and ask them for the back room, they'll take you to this room that's filled with nothing but paraphernalia regarding witchcraft and so on and so forth. And it just so happens that they sold out to a Fred's location. And so that pharmacy was able to move into the Fred's, and they still kept their back room in the Fred's. And so now when I need to go get supplies, I'm like, hey, got to go to Fred's. See you later.
That's one of the things that I hear an awful lot when we open up data about it.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, okay, I have no idea what just happened. That was like instant messaging each other like, WTF, what the hell?
It sounded like an alarm going off on my end, and I kept thinking I was waking up from a dream or something.
I am so sorry about that.
That was
interesting.
See, it's
wow.
The ghost of
okay.
the machine. See, we start talking about certain things, Alexander, and this is what happens. You know,
I blame the Illuminati.
That's pretty frequent with me. I start talking about this kind of stuff, and, you know, I didn't think that would hear an alarm go off, but, okay, I guess I can take the hint.
Well, I'll flip the subject over just a little bit. We were talking about the hidden things that are in there. Stephen brought up with Louisville and Kentucky and different, and then there's also Tennessee and Mississippi, all of those different states. And one of the most common things that I hear is when we open something up is I'll get inquiries. Well, I don't know anything about that state. And before I open a state up, I do a quick search. Usually in about 15 or 20 minutes, I can find most of the folklore and find a way to dig deeper into it. We have one author who is actually in one of the upcoming books who's never left their state. They use Google Maps to look and get an exact feel of the location that they were at and what the town looked like, down to the street level. And they I've been to the town that they described, and they described it perfectly and never been there. So you don't have to visit a state. You don't have to live in the state. You can get a lot of feel from just a little bit of research. And I was actually researching a story for Kentucky and found this little small thing not too far from Louisville, actually. The witch tree in Alexandria.
Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, just that little bit of story and research with that, we were, you know, you kind of seen this whole thing unfold, and it's something that was, it's interesting that I had never seen before, and it just took a little time to research it.
And I have come across quite a few things such as that where, if you were to watch a documentary or simply read a little bit on the area, you can get a pretty good feel for what's gone on. But, I mean, of course, if you are looking for those good urban legends or the folklore, you have to grab that from townspeople because they're the only ones that really know how to tell it and give it justice.
Well, yeah, that is very true.
All right, so back to the questioning now that, you know, the beeping is all over and stuff. What authors do you read the most of, and what styles do you enjoy the most?
Well, one thing about reading is I read a lot, but I read slow. ask anybody who's asked for a review or feedback on something. It takes me a little bit of time because moving around. But I started off as a young kid with, you know, Stephen King was coming out, so you had in a few of those, Peter Straub, Graham Masterson, and then discovered and branched out from there. I probably read about every genre. I have a couple favorites. Jim Butcher is one of my favorites, and both of his series that he has out. But then over the past couple of years, I discovered the smaller markets, which I believe the e-books have kind of opened up, self-publishing has opened up quite a bit for. And that's when the world kind of opened up. So now I can't get my hands on enough. I ran across Mark Tufo and then kind of discovered the zombie genre, kind of won over and looked at Robert Chatschutz, and he has both two different types, you know, stories, multiple stories, but he has one that's in zombie, but one it's in crime, and one of the stories on there. So now, to me, I think the world has kind of opened up to anything, and it gives it a great opportunity with the way publishing is today. So I don't think I could pick one type, but I do tend to gravitate towards horror. So after I kind of reach out a little bit, I come back into where my comfort zone, which is being scared.
All right. Well, and now with that beeping that we had, it did kind of throw me off just a little bit, but there was one question that I wanted to ask before we really went into the one that I had just asked you. Now, when we were speaking about people being able to tell urban folklore and myths of their area, when a person submits to State of Horror, of course, you do want them to feel of that area. But as far as the creature or the ghost or the murderer is concerned, can it be a creation of their own as long as they respect the state of which they're writing about? Such as if they give us a feel of that area, but they just create a monster of their own. How would that work?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
The feel of the location is more of a character than even some of the folklore. Even if you use a folklore, you still have to have that feeling. So you can use existing legends. You can take an existing legend and twist it to however, you know, your perception of it, or you can create your own. You wander through, you know, if you want to put a creature from waters and, you know, coming out of a mountain village, but as long as the lake is there, anything that you would like to do, you can, and any creation, and the more creative you are, usually the better the story becomes.
Agreed. Completely agreed. Now, do you really expect to cover all 50 states? And I hope you say yes. And how long do you think that it would take to cover all 50 states?
Yes, the plan is to do all 50 states and then some. But we did the work on it. This is kind of the first year we're bringing some of these out. So this year we will release four and be closing and getting ready to release some in January of next year. Next year, we hope to do 8 to 10. With that schedule, over the next 6 years, we should be able to reach all 50 states. And that may actually move up depending on how the stories are going and how quickly some of these come in. Because as the flow goes and the authors get excited about it, we might be able to open up more than two states at a time.
Okay. And, of course, I see that it's very simple to learn about the anthology, especially if you go to Google and you simply just type in State of Horror Anthology. You are the very first one to come up with those keywords.
Yes, and same with through Facebook. We have kind of a two area on the social media. You have the readers fan section, which is our page, and then we also have the groups where the authors can come in and we can kind of discuss and shoot ideas around and say different things. So both of those are available out on that and also at the website at Karen Coyne Press. And we try to keep updated and even do writer prompts and any interesting stories from the states. We try to make sure that, you know, we can kind of put it out there to get everybody in the mood for it.
Okay, great, great. Now, what do you think is going to happen when you cover all of the states? Are we going to start expecting part two, like Louisiana part two, Louisiana part three? Or do you see yourself at any time doing maybe a World of Horror where you bring in foreign countries as well and just unite hands all the way around the globe?
Well, kind of a little bit of both. The Louisiana one is a kind of a good example. It is one that was previously released, as mentioned earlier, but we're keeping to the format of 13 stories in each because 13 is such a lucky number. So, but we're getting a lot of great stories that are coming in. So in this case, we're going to do two volumes on it if we have enough stories to fill them in. And that's open for each of the states if we have enough response. But there's a couple of things that's working in the background that hopefully next year we will have some that will be cross states with a certain theme that will work across. So these will be kind of filtered in throughout the 50 state releases so that we can kind of take ideas and themes that are common for multiple states and kind of weave those in. Beyond that, going into the world, I never choose to limit anything. That's quite a possibility. I would like to actually see a State of Horror Brazil and Mexico, because I think those would both be fun, because there's a lot of great legends that are down there. It's just a matter of where the whole series takes us.
Nice. Well, as far as urban folklore is concerned, what some of your favorite urban legends, or maybe is there an urban legend nearby where you live that you feel Missouri is famous for? What would be some of the top ones that come to mind?
One of the ones for me growing up and even recently I started to get very fascinated is underneath St. Louis was a huge network of caves. I mean, at one time they actually held old movie theaters and speakeasies right underneath the city streets.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Caves still exist. Some of them are gone because modern times, highways have came through. Some have been closed off. There are a few key areas in the city that actually have access to those, and for their employees to go down and use them as storage, they have to be certified because there's parts of them that don't have oxygen. And probably only 40% of those have been discovered, so there's 60% of these caves that could have any type of story in it. And you get a few stories here and there because houses in the city may have a wall that's bricked up, and on the other side of the wall was an old access. Mm-hmm. So you get stories of things coming from the caves. You get stories of people disappearing in the caves. And those are kind of things that I was growing up with. It's hearing these different stories, and as you said earlier, sitting around for the locals, talking about it on your uncle, you know, sitting around dinner with your uncle, telling us about what happened when he was working up in the city. So that's the first one that comes to mind. But many of the cities, I've spent quite a bit of time up in Chicago, and it has theirs. A lot of different time, even being down in New Orleans recently. Their folklore and urban legends that they have down there are probably some of the longest ones I've listened to. So it's hard to pick a favorite from those. They all kind of give you a different feel.
Yes. And, of course, the New Orleansers, and I do have quite a few family who had grown up in New Orleans, and I remember going down there in the summers and visiting them. People from New Orleans, they truly know how to tell a story. And what I mean by that is 10 minutes later, you're still waiting for the end of the story.
Exactly. And we met quite a few people who were just did that this, you know, over the past week while we were down there. And you didn't want the time to end. You wanted to go, what's the next story? Tell me the next story. I know you have more.
Oh, yeah. I have come across so many people where even their accents will draw me in, like, okay, I know you got more. I know there's one more. And, you know, it's so beautiful that we do have anthologies out there such as your own, Southern Haunts, other books that bring that culture to people that might not have the ability to travel and be able to experience these places that our authors have had the opportunity to.
Absolutely. And that's, you brought up with Southern Haunts and that. That was one, some of the things that started when I was reading through those. Those were in multiple areas, whereas mm-hmm. the stories I was reading right before that were in a specific state. So that kind of opened me up in thinking about so many different things because you can broaden up the anthologies or bring them down really tight, but there's so many different ways you can weave these. We have another anthology that's out that is being edited by Margaret L. Colton that's called Pain the Ferryman. It's kind of a pull off of the press's name. And that one, the main characters, the only requirements, main character has to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows for a whole different opening and perspective of what you could do with those. And that's, I think, the fun of anthologies that I'm discovering more and more each year.
Oh, yes. Yes, and anthologies, let's say for a person who's not ever read a specific genre, but they're interested in that genre, the anthology can really be a good introduction to what that genre has to offer, because most of the time when you say a genre name such as sci-fi, fantasy, horror, there are so many subcategories that that name fits into. And it is the best way to see it, I believe, is an anthology.
And you, some of the artists, authors that I've discovered through anthologies. You read something and you go, I want to know more because I really like that story. Then you go look and find, oh, here's a book that they have. Or they may be in one genre, and when you go to look them up, most of their stuff is in a genre you already read. So you can see where authors get a chance to try and be in different areas and allow their creativity to explore. And that's, we have one specific story that's going to be in New Jersey that the author has never wrote a horror story. And they came to me and said, well, so what, how can I do this? And I said, did you ever watch Twilight Zone? That's horror as well. Did you ever see this? It doesn't have to be the in your face. Sometimes it just has to evoke that feeling and that fear or that questioning. And that's kind of the fun of it. It's not defined.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned what you did, because one of the authors that you and I share, Della West, she has never read any books of fiction that, well, I'm sure she has in high school or whatever, but she's not a reader of fiction. And she also, from my understanding in the times I've spoke with her, is not really a fan of the horror genre. But when she puts her pencil to the paper or her fingers to the keyboard, she can really give some creepy, moody, atmospheric short stories. And I know that as soon as your New Jersey State of Horror comes out, my money is getting slapped down for that one, definitely, because I want to read what she did with Maniac Mike. But I am the kind of person where when I buy one book, I have to buy all books in the series. So I'm thinking of just simply buying a bookshelf and getting it done with.
I'm actually the same way. I have shelves dedicated to one author or shelves dedicated to one series, and I keep looking at where am I going to put these at. I asked my wife if we could build onto the house, and she said we have to discuss that later on, so I can just put a library in. So
the sad thing, I have a library and I've ran out. Now, we had mentioned some of your favorite horror authors and so on and so forth. Now, if you had to pick a book that you felt was a book that completely floored you, what would it be? And also the same goes for movies.
Oh, book that completely floored me. I would have to go back to when I was a little younger, what got me reading and choose. Diving into kind of the horror, somebody handed me a copy of Carrie, and that was the first Stephen King I read. And that one kind of bothered me. But then I had Christine, and I started to kind of fall into it, and then Anne Rice, all of those kind of won in. But I really think the one that kind of that did grab me, I would have to say, would have been Christine. Because it was so different. It wasn't what I've seen in the movies at that time. It wasn't what I've seen done. It was, everything was about this car. And at that young age, being a, you know, young preteen boy, cars were everything. Mm-hmm. Cars were different to me after I read that story. I think that's kind of one of the things that kind of stuck with me, is that one book. Movie-wise, oh, being a huge movie fan, this one's even more difficult because it almost depends on the time frame. I think some of the best movies were ones that I never read the book on. Because not that books and movies should never be compared, but it's really difficult when being a reader and diving into a story and then seeing it up on the screen, because you can't portray all of those pieces that you fell in love with in the book. So the movies that I tend to enjoy are things that I haven't read. in one of those would actually have to go back to the old, besides the sci-fi Star Wars. Yes, I was a Star Wars geek growing up. But the scariest movie I think I can remember seeing growing up that stuck with me was Jaws.
Oh, God.
Because you really didn't see, you didn't see it. They didn't have the budget to make this all this huge special effects, so the creepiest part about it is you never saw what it was until the end.
Mm-hmm.
You knew
yeah,
what it was.
Yeah, and the thing is, Jaws, it terrified me as a kid where I was scared of the land shark. It was like, you know, Chevy Chase, Candy Graham, land shark.
Well, I'm not a good I can't swim very well. I swim like a rock. So, mm-hmm. And we grew up out of, you know, out of the city, so we would go to the river to go swimming. And, yeah, I was not really too happy about that after I saw the movie. And then as I got older, I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that was even worse because then you really get into it.
I'm so glad I'm speaking to someone who's read the book, because the thing is, when I read the book, I saw how great of a difference it was between the book and the movie, such as the soured relationship between Sheriff Brody and his wife. And, you know, it was quite a bit more psychological. The book was very...
Very much so. And when I was doing research for the New Jersey State of Horror, that
mm-hmm.
the original Jaws was based off of a shark attack in, I think it's 1912, that happened actually
yeah.
off the Jersey Shore. The movie set,
wow.
the movie sets it off of New York, so that was always fun whenever I was posting about that. But it actually was something that happened in Jersey, and it happened over like a 10-day period.
See, I knew that it was loosely inspired by an actual event, but I had no idea it was coming in New Jersey.
You really don't think shark attacks from New Jersey. It just kind of doesn't go there.
Too bad Snooki couldn't have been around that time and went swimming.
What, you've never seen the movie New Jersey Shark Attack?
I just want to put money on it.
I'll have to look that one up on Netflix.
Yeah. It's a Sci-Fi Channel original, if that gives you an idea.
Yeah, it does, and I live with a person who believes Sharknado is one of the best made-for-TV movies ever, and, you know, God, that was
well,
two things.
Well, it's not great for the reason that you think of great movies as being great, but it's one of those that's so bad it's great.
Yeah.
There's a few
yeah,
movies
I've,
that I think I've turned on late at night that it is so horrible that you just have to stay up to see how bad it gets.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
next
weekend when we do Bayou Con in Lake Charles, Robert Kay is in charge of doing the midnight movies there, and I help with that. This year we're showing Robo Geisha, and I'm just face-palming myself the whole time. I'm like, God, I have to sit through that again. Now, you have a pretty good web presence to you, and you speak about maybe some blogs that you might contribute to, or some ways where people can connect with you and be able to hold a conversation with you, such as we're doing now.
Well, there's a few. One of the things I started about 5 years ago is a blog website called tripthroughmymind.com. And that is kind of my event. It depends. It's kind of evolved. If you look through, there's some stuff. There's some satire on there. There's some commentary. There's a lot of recently, over the past year, there's been a lot about writing. And also, more recently, it's taken the focus of for readers with reviews and different things. I actually wanted to let her know that I said this. My daughter, Rihanna, who's 9 years old, loves to read. She is starting to do reviews, and these are her actual writing reviews, so they are written by a 9-year-old. And she does this little feature on that as well. And she's going to be with me in September down at Imaginarium. So she's all excited to meet everybody that she hears me talking about or that she's read their books. So she's really excited on that. But the trip through my mind is kind of my little world that I have a lot of fun with. Then we also have KarenCoinPress.com, which is the publishing on that. And that also has a lot of a field where there's some interactions and on interactions with the people who read, and also posting a lot of different things that are related to what's coming out. And that's where we kind of throw out a little bit about the culture and the feel of the states that are happening. And of course, I'm always available on Facebook. Just look me, Jerry Benz, up on Facebook. Send me a request, and I'd love to chat with people. I'd probably do that a little too often. One of these days, I'm going to get in trouble for that. However, I enjoy talking with as many people as I can on through that medium.
Nice. All right. Now, as we are drawing near the end of the show, is there any philosophy that you might could share with us regarding the horror genre or writing in general? Like, what could our listeners learn from you that they could apply to themselves when it comes down to sitting behind a computer and typing out a story? What might go on and push Simone to finish up something?
Well, one of the things that has drawn me out over the years, over the past year, meeting you and Stephen at Mid-South, meeting with Armand and talking with him and all the people I've interacted with, is the fact that the writing community is a community. We all work together for one thing. It doesn't matter if you have a book out and this person has a book out, if we're not competing against each other, we're building it together. And now, with the way the publishing industry has changed, it means more for us to do that. And the presses should work together. We should incorporate. We should promote. We should kind of work, but we also tend to support each other.
Yeah.
I believe that, you know, those people who feel that writing is solitary, sitting in the room by yourself and typing, are the ones that struggle to put something out or to complete something. Those that realize that other people are struggling, regardless of how many years they've been doing it, if they're struggling the same way, that's what makes the difference between somebody wanting to write something and somebody writing something and completing it. You learn from each other. And I think that's the most important thing that I have kind of discovered over the past year and a half, is we have to stick together because that's how we grow. So hopefully, for those people who are sitting out there and working and haven't reached out, haven't spoken to other authors, they're reachable, they're obtainable. You can send them a message, you can talk, and you'll find out you have more in common with those with experience than you think. So that's my little piece that I keep wanting everybody to enjoy and understand, is we're here together.
Yes, that we are. And the thing is, there's power in numbers, and it's like what a Magicopter does. A Magicopter is an umbrella name that quite a few authors and artists refer to, and it allows them to know marketing through other places, or it allows them to know about conventions and so forth. And pretty much when you're in the mindset of the philosophy that you just shared, it can truly open up doors for you, because I look at being an author as something where if you have multiple authors around you, you are also feeding off of their creativity and they're feeding off of you. And it kind of becomes something where, like, for example, when I go to a convention and I'm surrounded by nothing but creative souls, I come home and I'm like, okay, new story, there we go. And it's inspiring when you put yourself in those situations, but I think the philosophy that you shared is some of the best that we could have our listeners enjoy for tonight.
I hope so. And I am looking forward to seeing all of you again in September, maybe beforehand. You never know. But it's been such a pleasure both to meet you in person, to talk to you tonight, and Alexander, as you said, to get to know each other by communicating back and forth online. When I talked about you can learn from people and you can see that you're in the same boat or open and share ideas, that's, you know, that's kind of the same thing that I've been noticing since March, is all the people that we've been able to talk to, like yourself. So thank you very much for taking the time, and I love the fact that you have a medium here for people to talk and learn.
Well, thank you. All right. Well, we are drawing near the end of that time, and I do have to ask this because this is just a curiosity question. When I was in school, when we were doing book reports, we were not allowed to do book reports on books that had been made into movies anytime, and they also had to be books that were considered to be in the mainstream. Now, you said that your daughter reviews your books, books that you provide for her to read, and some of those are going to be more so indie books. Does her learning facility allow her the ability to be able to write book reports on any book that she likes, or do they limit her abilities?
So they actually haven't reached a point. She's going into fourth grade this year, and they haven't started the book reports yet. What she's been writing is actually reviews, and she's so excited to go back to school and say, look what I've done.
Nice.
But she's – one thing that's it's great about with Rihanna and her reading is – she'll read just about anything. But, you know, we have that real quick review first to make sure that it doesn't have things that are inappropriate or is not inappropriate. In fact, I remember her laughing the first time she saw Jurassic Park because she knew that that was a carnivore and that was a herbivore, so they shouldn't worry about that one, but the other one's going to eat them. She was about five. So she's still...
Oh, you hear that, Stephen? We're going to have a future book critic that can give us some good reviews.
So her most recent one is out on the website was for The Boxcar Baby. And she is so excited for when the new book comes out this fall. So she's really eager for that one.
If she enjoyed Boxcar Baby by J.L. Moldfield, she might also enjoy Lost Daughter of Issa by the same author, because a lot of people who said that one book tend to enjoy the other as well.
That's on her reading list, and she does want me to express to everybody that I hope they understand that I can only read so much and so fast.
We are... All right. Well, we're finally we're getting down to that final few seconds. And once again, Mary, thank you so much for being on here tonight. Thanks for sharing your knowledge with us. And I will be submitting State of Horror, Louisiana.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading that. And next time you go down, you have to let me know. Who knows? I might be able to kind of meet you down there sometime.
Oh, sounds awesome. We can go to John Lafitte's and have some absinthe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show, Jimmy.
Road trip. All right. Well, thanks again, and I hope that everyone had a great time listening, and I hope you have a good night.
Thank you so much, and thanks, everybody, tonight, and talk to you all soon.
Good night, all.
I'll see you then.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.